It's now time for the Fantasy 411 podcast.
Hi, everybody. Welcome to Fantasy 411. I'm Matthew Leach, talking fantasy baseball with MLB.com's lead fantasy writer, Fred Zinke. And we are starting to get into kind of the full rhythm of the season. The main thing, I think, is we're starting maybe to have some numbers we can believe a little bit. I don't know how much you start believing numbers in May, Fred, but I think I believe them a little more than I did at least a month ago.
Yeah, definitely. I was emailing with Corey Schwartz the other day, and he was saying to me, it's hard to differentiate the difference between a bad start to the season and the start of a bad season. And I think, you know, May is when we start to believe that maybe something could be the start of a bad season or the start of a good season for someone rather than just a good start or a bad start.
Yeah, you know, I think you make a good point there because I feel like I'm not entirely certain of this, but I feel like you can get more of a feel by this point who's not right than who's going to be really good because, you know, you can still get hot streaks within here, and a two-week hot streak can still look like a good 6 weeks, but if you've been struggling for 6 weeks, that's a pretty bad sign.
Yeah, for sure, and I know people will talk about, you know, oh, every hitter or a lot of hitters will have a six-week rough period at some point during the season, and when that six-week rough period is in July or August, it's masked more than when it's at the beginning of the season and there's nothing else to bank on it. But I think that only carries some weight because, like, sometimes this a six-week bad stretch in the middle of the season is surrounded by some good performances prior to that streak. When someone comes into the season and all they've done is play poorly, you know, then you have that I think it's a bigger possibility that they just aren't going to get it together.
And there's another thing, and look, if we're talking about a star, you know, stars are going to play. But and one of the things, and we've talked about this before, is how different those numbers look to the media asking questions, to the fans getting impatient, and frankly, to a manager and to a GM, where if your numbers are for the season are terrible because your bad stretch came 6 weeks into the season, that can hurt your playing time a lot more than if your numbers, if you have a rough 6 weeks in July, but your overall numbers look good. We should be more rational than that, but we're not.
Yeah, for sure. And, you know, and I think sometimes even not being rational might even be the way to go because these players are people and they do go hot and cold. And sometimes, especially if someone hasn't built up a lot of currency within a team or an organization, you know, if they go cold for a while, then they get sent to the minors or to the bench because the team can't afford to wait around for them.
The flip side of that is that sometimes you do get a guy who is not only off to a hot start but is continuing something from last year, and that is how we set up a guy that I'm really intrigued by, and that's Jackie Bradley Jr. He was a really hyped prospect coming up. He was a guy, and he was not thought of as a glove-only guy when he was coming up. He was a high draft pick, and people thought he would hit. And he didn't hit, and so there was sort of this idea, well, okay, he'll still have value if he doesn't hit because he's such a good defender. But this offense is not out of nowhere. It's not like he has never hit. It's not like we thought he wouldn't hit. We thought at some point he would hit. And I think that, combined with the fact that this goes back to August, makes me believe a little bit. How high are you on Bradley?
Yeah, I'm high enough that I would want to own him, you know, in pretty much every league. And he was actually dropped in a 15-team league that I'm in, you know, in the middle of April when he was struggling. My one source of concern is he was really hot last season in August. And then he was actually not great in September. But the August stats were so good that if you set your start date, you know, to early August last year through the end of the year, his overall numbers do look really good. So, you know, I could see that. So I think maybe my approach to him is you're either in or you're out. So you're either going to put him in and you're going to ride this hot streak. And then when a cold streak comes, you're going to leave him in for the next hot streak or you're out. And I would have no problem with someone saying now that they're in. And if he has a two-week stretch where he hits 198, then you're still in.
Yeah, I think that makes a lot of sense. I think that you have to decide. You also have to decide, again, you know, we talk about this some, you have to decide what your needs are, and you have to decide if the kind of hitter that he seems to be suits the needs that you have. I mean, I think that kind of, you know, it's looking like he's not a high average hitter. It's looking like he is a guy who's going to get you some power. Well, does that suit, you know, is that the kind of player that you need in order to ride out those slumps? I think those factors, and especially as we get deeper into the season, those factors weigh more and more into those kinds of decisions.
Yeah, I'm typically also against players who hit really low in the lineup, but I think I would make an exception with him because that Red Sox lineup looks really good this year. And, you know, him hitting low in the lineup, but then kind of turning it over to Betts, Pedroia, you know, Bogarts, Ortiz. Like, to me, he's losing at bats there, but he's surrounded by some good players.
Yeah. To go back to slumping players, Adam Jones got a big hit last night, but he is certainly not off to a very good start. Carlos Gomez is not off to a very good start. I don't know that anybody, even in mixed leagues, is cutting bait on Jones because he's been so consistent. Gomez is, doesn't have that long record of being at least productive. It's been spotty even in, except for the last just few years. Are you cutting bait on Gomez, or are you looking to – how are you handling these guys, and do you view either one as a buy low?
Yeah, I don't know if I view either one as too much of a buy low because there's still name value there, and I've been hit with those questions a lot in the recent Twitter chats, and I'm not against cutting Gomez, especially in a shallow league, because as you said, like he was really good for two seasons, and then around that he's had some good stretches, but Jones has been good for many years, and I wonder if Jones just physically isn't right now, but at the same time I wouldn't drop him at all, and if I was trading him away I would want something useful for him. I wouldn't just give him away. With Gomez, I'm just not finding, I really looked at his underlying numbers and I was trying to find some reasons for optimism, and I'm not seeing them right now.
Yeah, he was a guy, not that I thought would be terrible, but he was a guy that I didn't want to buy in at sort of the price level anyway. He's a guy that I just, as kind of what we're talking about, he's just a guy that it's hard to be really confident that he's going to give you what you think need to get at the point where he's usually taken. So, he's a guy that, you kind of had to go in the first place knowing that he wasn't a guarantee, that he could be really productive, but especially the way he didn't really get it done after the trade last year, he was a guy you kind of had to know might not reach the ceiling that you hoped.
Yeah, and I think you hit on it with the trade last year. We can go all the way back to the trade deadline, and he was supposed to go to the Mets, and they had concerns, and they ended up not taking him. And then, so there's kind of strike one, and then he didn't hit well for the Astros down the stretch, and there's strike two, and now, he hasn't hit well at the beginning of the season. And, in a 10-team league, for example, there's just so many options. I think, I would cut him and take Jackie Bradley Jr., not necessarily thinking that he's going to solve all my problems, but he's playing well right now, and in a shallow league, if he cools off, I can look at other options at that time. I just don't think in a 15-team league, I get it, that you can't cut Carlos Gomez, for just nobody. But, in a 10-team league, I would cut him. And to me, Jones, you're right, is different. He's been a productive player for a long time. He struggled in September with injuries. He doesn't seem to be 100% right now, but I could see him getting it together enough to be pretty productive in the summer.
And, again, that's a good lineup. He's not going anywhere. He might get bumped down to six in that lineup, but that guy's going to play. If he's healthy, he's going to be in there, and he's going to be getting at bats near the middle of a lineup that's going to score a lot of runs. It is almost impossible to envision Adam Jones being healthy and being so bad for so long that he doesn't continue to get really good opportunities in a good lineup.
Yeah, for sure. And I think he will probably keep a prominent lineup spot just because even though the lineup has a lot of potential, the players who could potentially replace him, a lot of them aren't hitting. Matt Wieters hasn't hit very well. Pedro Alvarez hasn't hit well. I think they probably just keep running Jones out there in a premium lineup spot until he gets going.
And beyond that, this is one of those where, to some extent, every star player, you hear about what a big part of the team he is, but that guy, by all accounts, is the heart of that team. And it would be drastic measures on Buck Showalter's part to do anything cute with Adam Jones. I think that just, sometimes that stuff doesn't factor in a concrete way. That kind of thing doesn't matter at all in fantasy, right? All we care about is the numbers. But I think there is some value in knowing those kinds of little things that, Carlos Gomez is a guy who I can absolutely see the Astros saying, you know what, you're not producing, you're going down to the bottom of the lineup, you're going to sit for a while. That's just not happening in Baltimore with Adam Jones.
Yeah, I totally agree.
Another core key guy, another guy of those guys who's been somewhere forever, Joe Mauer is having a really nice year, and it looks like he's going to lead off. And even for a guy with no speed, that seems like the best use for him. Because, look, he just doesn't have much power anymore. He's not going to drive in a lot of runs, but he's hitting for average, and he's drawing walks, and he could score a lot of runs leading putting off with his skill set right now. Does that affect how much you like Mauer right now?
You know, I think you're right. I think it's a good baseball decision for the Twins, especially because their lineup hasn't been especially effective this year, to have him lead off, you know, put Dozier behind him, something like that. But for me, from a fantasy perspective, like once Mauer lost the catcher eligibility, it's just really hard. I think he has one home run this year, and it's just really hard for me in a mixed league to ever consider a corner infielder who I don't expect to hit 10 home runs. It's, like, that's just a really low total. Even in a 15-team league, I'm just not sure if I can go there. Even if he hits 300, I just don't know if you can take that like kind of an empty batting average or just batting average and runs, because he won't drive in a lot of runs from the leadoff spot with no power. So he's not going to steal bases. So I'm just not sure if there's enough there, even though I like this as a baseball move.
You know, I hear you. I think that makes sense. And again, you look, and it is jarring. You look at the actual numbers. It's one of the things where you do have to remind yourself that Joe Mauer has been really good for the Twins, but one home run, 9 RBI, 10 runs is not really getting it done. So,
yeah, I mean, if he finishes the season with, let's say, 9 or 10 homers,
right,
60 RBI, 75 runs, something like that, like it just probably doesn't get you into a mixed league lineup. He's fine maybe if you have an injury to a player and you're just looking for someone for a week or two that won't hurt you, or late in the season if you need help in batting average. But I think when he was a catcher, the lack of power was okay because the batting average was so much better than other catchers. But at first base, there's so many options.
Yeah, one of those options, Justin Smoak, a guy who's going to get a lot of opportunity. Another guy who hasn't always hit for a lot of power, even though he looks like he should. He's one of those guys that seems like he ought to hit a lot more home runs than he does. He's a big dude. He plays a power position. He's kind of having an interesting year so far, but, you know, again, heck of an opportunity in a very, very good lineup. I was really skeptical on Smoak. He was not doing much when he started moving into the lineup, but he's been performing pretty well. You kind of have to get on that now, don't you?
Yeah, I mean, I think you have to be interested. I mean, last season with the Blue Jays, and that was his only year with them, 18 home runs and 296 at-bats. So, I mean, had he had 500 at-bats last season, if Chris Colavello didn't have a nice year, like, Smoak probably hit 25-plus home runs last season. And, you know, and then he's on mixed league teams, you know, going into this year, even with a low batting average. So I think you have to look at them, and they've been batting him fifth, right behind the big three. So, yeah, to me, he's someone in a 12-team league you probably pick up, and in a 15-team you definitely want to own.
Jung Ho Kang is a guy I love. He's a player. He's fun to watch. He's a guy that I got into a stupid bidding war in a league last year and lost and was really unhappy about that. But is not only a good player but a fun player, and boy, he's just come back and started raking. How high does he rank? Even with a short track record, even coming off an injury, how high does Kang rank for you?
Yeah, to me, I think he's probably a top 10 shortstop. You know, top 12 for sure. I don't know if I'm willing to put him in the top 5 just because of that long layoff and a serious injury. I think he has top 5 shortstop potential because this is someone who could hit for average and hit 20 homers and chip in 5 to 10 steals. But I just don't think – I know he had the 2-homer game when he, like, first came back, but I just want to see a little more to make sure – like we talked about with Michael Brantley, I know it's a totally different injury, but just guys coming off serious injuries, long layoffs, I'm not sure if I'd put him higher than top 10 right now, but top 10 is pretty solid.
And I think the thing to remember that I think you hit on is something I think I've talked about it with hand and wrist injuries, but I think it's really true with any injury. When you have that kind of layoff, you can have a guy step in. I think we talked about this with Freeman some. You can have a guy step in and look really good for a while when you feel good. You've gone through all the rehab. You're strong. You're healthy. You're as strong as you're going to be, and you step in there, and you're excited, and you feel good, and you produce. And then that grind of playing every single day starts weighing in. And sometimes guys get worse rather than better when they're coming off an injury, because the best they're ever going to feel is the day they get back in the lineup.
Yeah, that's totally possible, and I'm just not willing to remove that concern yet. And I mean, and put him in front of a Francisco Lindor or up in that group. I'd still rather own Lindor, say at shortstop, or Corey Seager or someone like that. But once you get past that top, or Bogarts, you know, but once you get past that group and you get into the Elvis Andrus type group, like, I think I prefer him over those options.
I think that makes sense. Move to the starting pitchers and a couple of similar related questions. I tend to be somebody generally, even when streaming starting pitchers, I have a general fantasy philosophy that I don't like to think too much about the opponent. I really want to think primarily about the player. I'm going to feel a lot dumber starting a lousy player because I like the matchup than I will starting a good player and getting burned by the matchup. So I want to come in by saying that, and that's more a football thing than a baseball thing, but just my personal philosophy is the tiebreaker is always the player rather than the matchup. With that said, you asked an interesting question, which is, are the Cubs so dominant right now that you are avoiding starting pitchers against them except the really elite, except a Kershaw type, a Bumgarner type, those kinds of guys?
Yeah, I mean, I can see a lot of reasons to avoid them because it's not just the good lineup. So when you run a pitcher out against the Cubs, you know, he's going to be facing a really good lineup that could cause him to have really bad ratios. And the opposing starter is also going to be someone who's done quite well this season. So he's not likely to come away with kind of a lucky win where he throws six innings, gives up four runs, but, you know, manages to win the game anyway. So, I mean, the win potential is low. The blow-up potential is decently high. Like, I'm not saying you sit the Strasburgs, the Garrett Coles, like the Carlos Martinez. You don't sit them against the Cubs. But once you get into that mid-tier, you know, type of pitcher, like, I think then they are kind of a matchup to avoid right now.
Yep. And on the flip side, the Braves, and I think the Braves are, you know, a little less obvious in this regard because they only have half of that. You know, the Braves lineup is not good. They are not scoring runs, but they're starting to get some pretty decent starting pitching. I mean, I know their record is terrible, and I know that overall that looks like a bad team, but those guys are starting to pitch. And so, you know, I guess the question is, how much does facing the Braves tilt it, and is it less than that point you make about the Cubs where in every way you are at a disadvantage when you start somebody against them?
Yeah, I'm pretty heavily tilted towards the Braves right now, and I know what you said about the Braves having some respectable starters, and that's true. When I now kind of going into my thinking, often when I'm picking my last starters, is the first and foremost I'm going to think about the ratios, and I try not to just think, oh, I'm really scared about possible ratios for this starter, but I think he can win the game, so I'm going to start him anyways. I find that hasn't worked out for me often in the past. When I'm targeting the Braves, you know, they're right at the bottom of the league in OPS against right-handers and left-handers. I mean, there's just, like, the matchups are so appealing. I started Adam Morgan in a couple leagues this week against Atlanta, and I don't think Adam Morgan's great, but I don't think he's terrible, and it turned out he did quite well against them. I just feel like the potential to give up, five, six runs against the Braves right now is just so low.
I think it's a fine point. I am really intrigued by Steven Wright, and I'm starting to believe. I think there might be something there, even in that division, even in that ballpark. Are you with me?
Yeah, I'm interested. And, you know, I made the joke in our notes that, you know, is he baseball's best knuckleballer? Well, that would be a two-man race. But Ari Dickey was, you know, really – I was trying to almost just remember, like, Ari Dickey was really, really effective a few years ago when everything – was going really well for him. So it can happen for a knuckleballer where he has a ton of fantasy value for a stretch. And I could see that with Wright, and I know what you mean about the division, but he pitches on one of the teams with the best lineups, and so he doesn't have to go against that one. And the Yankees lineup hasn't looked great, and the Rays lineup hasn't looked great. So for a pitcher on the Red Sox, it's not that daunting, especially with a nice lineup behind him. I think he should be owned in all leagues, and I think you just put him in the starting lineup and kind of shut your brain off about it until he gives you reason to think otherwise.
Yeah, I think he's still sitting there in my 10-team mixed, and I'm probably picking him up next time because he looks pretty good to me. Another guy that I was really slow to believe on. Let's package these two guys because they're doing similar good things with the same club. Marco Estrada and Jay Happ both look really good. They both had good finishes last year. I'm still skeptical on both of them, but I'm starting to wonder if maybe the Blue Jays are one of those teams that's, you know, smarter than we think. That's maybe got maybe there's something going on there with the success they're having with these guys. How do you see these guys probably more than I do? What do you think of the two of them?
Yeah, I'm with Happ. I have, like, his strikeout rate this year is pretty low, and his walk rate's not great. So I feel like some regression's coming there. Like, I would be maybe looking to sell high on him. That being said, I do think he's someone who should be owned in most leagues. I'm a little higher on Estrada. Everyone thought that Estrada going to Toronto last year was a disaster waiting to happen because of the park and American League and him being so flyball prone. But, like, it's kind of like what we were just talking about with Wright. Like, sometimes the pitcher just builds up a sample size that you just can't ignore. And for him now, it's about a calendar year since he went in their rotation. And all of the results have been good, even in the postseason last year. So I think now you just have to buy in and accept that he is what he is. Not a great strikeout rate, but because he's a flyball pitcher, he keeps what I like about Estrada and is that he's a flyball pitcher, so he keeps his whip down. So you don't have to worry about the whip. You haven't had to worry about the ERA. You might at some point. And then with that lineup, he can win his share of games. So I must admit, like big picture, I am a bit of a sucker for those fly ball prone type pitchers because they will keep their whip down, and that's one of the two ratios you need to concern about.
Yeah, I think that's, yeah. So it's time for our weekly discussion of Kevin Gausman. I want to believe he's coming off another really nice start. He's, you know, he did it against the Twins is not exactly the most daunting lineup, but still, I think I have to believe now. Are we believing in Gausman right now?
Yeah, I think you have to believe enough to pick him up if he's on waivers in any league. And I think, for the most part, you put him in your starting lineup and kind of see where we go from here because, you know, this is a pitcher who was expected to be really, really good in the majors. And maybe we're just in a situation where it took longer than, you know, than we anticipated. But if it happens now, like, you still gain the value out of it.
Yeah. How worried are you about David Price?
So I did a lot of looking at his... you know, at his stats this weekend, and I did try to buy low on him in a couple leagues and didn't get him, but I can't actually figure out exactly why he's been so bad. Like, with some of the other pitchers, like Sonny Gray, I can point to a reason. With Price, like, his walk rate's fine, his strikeout rate's fine, his home run rate's fine, his ERA's just really, really high, and so I can't really say, like, this is the, like, oh, he's just giving up too many homers right now, or, oh, he's just, you know, walking too many batters. So that makes me optimistic that he is going to straighten it out. That being said, with me being from Toronto, like, this isn't just a 2016 thing. Like, this is someone who was bypassed in the postseason for Marcus Stroman last year because the Blue Jays weren't super confident that he could go out and give them a great start. So I am worried, but I can't pinpoint the reason, so I do feel like I would buy low on him.
I think that makes sense. The thing about Price to me, and I say this a lot, and I, you know, I'm probably a too harsh a judge, but Price is another one of those guys where you don't have to go back that. Now, look, the strikeouts are still very high, and that's worth noting. The strikeouts, he leads the American League in strikeouts right now. He led the American League in strikeouts in 2014, but you don't have to go back that far to a time when Price was very good, but not super great. You look 2013, 2014, he was, at least as far as ERA, quite good, but not great. 3.26 and 3.33. Now, look, those are very good. I'm not running David Price down. The point is not that David Price is not good, but the point is that it's a little bit like Lester in that I think he's got this sheen. I put it this way. I think he's closer to the twos than he is to the elite ones, and more accurately, I think he's closer to the twos than perception puts him. I think we think of him with the true ones, and he's a one, but I think he's not quite as high up as we put him because of perception, because of name value, because of Cy Young and all that kind of thing. Does that make sense?
It does. So I'll throw a couple scenarios at you, and then we'll kind of see maybe where he fits in with you. If you owned Price right now, would you trade him straight up for Lester?
Probably, yeah.
Yeah,
probably,
I think I would, too, because I feel like maybe Price ends up, in a good scenario, Price is a few percentage points better than Lester, but in the other scenario, he's much, much worse if he doesn't get this straightened out. Would you trade him for, like, a Carlos Martinez or a Marcus Stroman, one of those types of players?
I would not, and part of that is that even if Price doesn't bounce back, the strikeouts are there, and I don't like, you know, particularly for somebody like Stroman, even in maybe not a full-on worst-case scenario for Price, but in a he-never-gets-to-what-we-hope scenario, and even if Stroman does, you know, I can easily see Price having a 60 strikeout advantage on Stroman.
Yeah, and in two leagues, I mentioned that I tried to buy low on him. In two leagues, I offered Dallas Keuchel straight up for him after Keuchel threw seven innings and gave up two runs on Saturday night. And in both leagues, the owners actually declined. So, you know, it seems like some price owners are just holding firm on him for now.
Yeah, and again, I think that's a lot easier to do. I think the thing you point out, 53 strikeouts, 12 walks, makes that a lot easier to sort of be patient. And I think there's some element of this kind of irrational worry because what if the contract is bad? I think when we think about him, we sort of may allow some of those external worries to seep into an assessment of a guy just right now.
Yeah, I totally agree. And I think that Price in fantasy right now is being victimized a little bit by pitching for the Red Sox. And that's a team that gets a ton of media coverage and
yep.
some aggressive media coverage. And obviously he's under the microscope after signing that contract. So, you know, I feel like if Price was in the third year of a contract with the Mariners right now and pitching like this, it just wouldn't be quite a big deal. Whereas in Boston, from a fan perspective, and I understand why, like they're really scrambling right now, thinking like, holy moly, have we committed several years to
right.
see this? And while they're trying to figure that out, the fantasy owners are panicking and not remembering that it's just a few starts.
Yeah, it all kind of feeds on itself. We move to the bullpen. Aroldis Chapman comes in and clearly is the guy. He has finished two games already. One of them was not a save, but this thought that maybe he might get eased in clearly was not the case. He's the guy. If we're talking trades, do you treat him as a top two, three closer going forward? How high do you rank him if people are looking for him? Or if you have him and you stashed him and maybe you're looking to take advantage of that now?
Yeah, I think to me he's a top five closer now. I would rather own Wade Davis and Kenley Jansen. They're just rolling, you know, their teams are doing well and they're into the season and I feel like they're just a little safer. But I know with Chapman with the strikeouts, like, could be pretty incredible. But yeah, to me he's a top five closer, and if someone's looking to buy on a closer, you could go after him right now, although his owner's probably pretty excited to just actually use him after stashing him for so long. He does have so much hype and fantasy because of those strikeouts that you're right. If somebody owns him and there'll be owners out there who own him and are doing fine and saves because they covered for his loss, you could probably get a lot for him right now. If you need a starting pitcher, you can get a John Lester type for him or, you know, a really good hitter for him. So it's worth exploring.
That to me is why he's an interesting guy. I have him in one league and it's just that I stocked up, I'm covered. And now I kind of have an embarrassment of closers in that league. And, if you have him, is that what are you trying to do? If you've got Chapman and you're willing to move him, what are you looking for?
Yeah, no, I think he's the type of closer that you move if you have that embarrassment of riches at the closer position, because like first you think like, oh, I'll get rid of my worst closers, but then you start floating them out there and nobody really wants to give
right.
you a lot for them, so you're not really picking up an impact player. Well, those other closers have gotten you to this point in saves, so if you like them and if they're pitching well, you know, then don't sell them. Sell Chapman. Look for a good hitter, like a Matt Carpenter type of someone who kind of comes to mind. They were similar points in drafts, you know, as the top closers, you know, or a pitcher if you need a starter, like a John Lester type, like a good number two starter. And I think that's a good return for Chapman. I'd rather go that route than, like I said, than trade the Brad Ziegler for just like a fill-in starter.
That makes a lot of sense. I, for that same reason, I'm not currently scrounging for saves. Tony Cingrani has 13 strikeouts and 10 walks. He also has saves in his last two outings. To me, the first of those is enough to dissuade me from liking the second. How urgent a save situation does it need to be for you to be on Cingrani?
Yeah, it'd have to be an NL-only league. And even then, I might actually just pick him up and put him on my bench because I just wouldn't want him in my active lineup for the blow-up potential. So in a mixed league, I'm just not interested. And, in fact, if I had him in a mixed league, if I had picked him up, you know, if he gets one more save, I would try to trade him to the team at the bottom of the league in saves or the couple bottom teams in saves for just anyone who I would rather have than the players on waivers. If I could pick up, if he got a couple saves and there was someone who owned a Jay Happ type who's still not highly regarded in fantasy, you know, I'd be happy to trade Cingrani for him if he gets up to three or four saves and another owner needs saves.
All right, we will move on to the two-start pitchers, and it's some good names on here. I'm not sure how much I think it's a pretty good week. The list you give me here is Ventura, Ocasio, Holland, Happ, Miley Eovaldi. Now, the matchup that jumps out by far to me is Hap, Tampa Bay, and at Minnesota. I like that a lot. I like Nicasio at home against the Braves and Rockies, if you like Nicasio, though, again, we sort of go back to what I was talking about. But I wonder if maybe my favorite matchup, my favorite guy of that, Derek Holland's a guy I've always liked at Oakland. At Houston, as you know, as you've noted a lot, it's not a great park, but that's a team that strikes out a lot. I think I may make like Holland the most of that list. Who do you like?
Yeah, I think it'd be Hap for me, just because he's really on a roll in those lineups. You know, don't scare me at all. I can even throw, because of a rainout earlier this week now, John Neese, who we've talked about a few times, has the same matchups as Nicasio now. He's been pushed back, so they're both two-start pitchers. Neese, to me, is a really tough call because he hasn't been pitching well, but, man, like we talked about with the Braves, like he's home to the Braves and then home to the Rockies. The Rockies, solid matchup, but the Braves, a really appealing one. I think I'd be inclined to use him. Ventura's the one that just, I have no idea what to do with. Like, I put him on the list not because many owners can pick him up, but because there'll be a lot of people out there who own him and don't know what to do with him. He was drafted fairly high in leagues this year with a lot of, you know, upside and potential, and he hasn't produced at all. And if you own him still, it's hard to not start him in a two-star week. But, like, the way he's pitching, could you really start him against the Red Sox?
Yeah, I don't think I could, but... You know, again, it sort of comes down to, for me, with a guy like that, it comes down to, do I believe in the guy? Because if I believe in the guy, I just generally, if I believe in the guy, it has to be really extreme circumstances for me not to start a guy I like. And I'm not sure even the Red Sox are that kind of extreme circumstance if I believe in it. If I got him, if I drafted him, if I like him, if I don't, I'm probably sitting him anyway. I guess that's my point. If I don't believe in him, I'm probably sitting him anyway. And if I do, I'm not. And you know, if he's on my roster. Now, picking a guy up is a separate matter. I kind of want to go back to Nicasio a little bit because he's got a really interesting game log. He's got basically three rough starts. Two of them are at tough places to pitch, Detroit and Arizona, and one of them is against the Cubs. And then he's got three very nice games, and you know, that's a teeny tiny sample size, and scouting the stats is dangerous and all of that. But I'm starting to wonder if Nicasio is going to be one of those guys where if you like the matchups, he's a must, and if you don't, you don't. But I wouldn't be surprised. You know, the overall numbers don't look good, but given what he's done in favorable circumstances this year, I can definitely see him having a really nice week against those matchups.
Yeah, I agree. I think I would start him in pretty much every league. And, you know, going back to what I said earlier about, you know, I just can't see him getting rocked by the Braves.
Yeah.
And I could see him throwing seven innings of one-run ball against them. And then that sets it up so he's already a good start for that week before he even gets to the Rockies matchup. So that if it's a little sketchy, if it's six innings, four runs, and he walks four batters or something, like, then you're like, okay, well, earlier in the week I got a really nice start out of him. And then going back to Ventura for a minute, I wonder if next week's going to be the catalyst for some owners to drop him, because
yep.
I've always kind of been of the mentality where if you own a pitcher and you don't really trust him, you know, he's lost your trust, and he gets to the point where he has a two-star week and you still won't use him, that's kind of unless that two-star week involves Coors Field or something like that. But in general, like, the matchup against the Red Sox is in Kansas City. Like, if you're not willing to start Ventura with a home start and a start against the White Sox next week, then it may be a sign that it's time to let him go in a shallow league.
And I think that's kind of that goes hand in hand with what I was saying. I mean, I think to some extent we're saying the same thing from different directions, and that is if you're keeping this guy, then you should be starting him, and if you're not, then don't. I mean, I think that's sort of, to some extent, it's kind of two sides of the same coin. We're kind of saying the same thing. Like, if you believe in Yordano Ventura and you have him on your roster, then start him. And if you're not going to start him, then don't have him. I think they're kind of the same point, ultimately.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, you went back, like, go back to the league you mentioned where you have Steven Wright on waivers in your 10-team league. Like, if you were holding him and you don't trust him, then drop him for Wright, because obviously you don't trust him for the two-start week. So move on and pick up someone who's pitching really well, or owners in some other shell leagues, move him for Hap and get the two starts out of Hap next week, and then just see where Hap goes from there. And if this is the week that Ventura turns it around, and then is good for the rest of the season, well, then you missed out. But, I mean, there's a good body of evidence now this season to suggest that you're right in not trusting him. I get in a 15-team league you got to keep him and maybe you just have to bench him. But in 10 or 12-team leagues, I would be okay with letting him go right now.
All right, well, that's the Fantasy 411 this week. Thanks, Fred Zinke, for taking some time to talk, and thanks, everybody, for listening.